Okay, thanks to everyone for coming. Hello, I'm Matt Biddulph. I've come over here from London. Very pleased to be here. I was just talking to one of the signers from the main stage earlier on. Told me the sign. World. So, as I say, I'm Matt. I work at a company called Doppler. We are a social network for travel. And I'm the CTO there, and I built the system from its first line of code up to its two-year-old state now. Got a slightly larger team, but I'm still very sort of hands-on with the code. So I'm just interested from a general point of view of this talk, who in here considers themselves a developer, coder, technologist? Cool, and who doesn't? Okay, cool, all right, so we can keep the technical content fairly interesting, hopefully. So, this is my favorite thing about Unix. The best thing about the command line, the wonderful stroke of genius from 25 years ago, the ampersand. You put it on the end of a command, and it means do it in the background. I want you to go away and do this, and I don't want to hear from you directly. I want control to be returned to me, and I'm going to do some other things. And there are lots of mechanisms in Unix that when a process goes into the background, it can talk back to you in other ways. It might end up writing to a file somewhere. It might communicate with you on a pipe. But Unix, from the very to its very core, is about doing multiple things at once. Now, when we make web systems, a lot of the time, although they're massively, massively parallel, there's this wonderful inherent scalability of HTTP, the fact that you can have many, 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 many users using your website at the same time, not interfering with each other at all in terms of a sort of computer science problem of collaboration or connection between processes. and you get to serve them individually. The HTTP request comes in, you do something about it. And what this means is that we tend to think, as we build systems, we tend to think about the composition of them and the way they're going to achieve something on behalf of the user as a linear problem. And I think certainly in the earlier days of building a new service, we can fall into certain pitfalls that don't think about the ampersand. Can I put some processing in the background? Can I serve the user quicker? Now, a modern web system, to me, needs gears. It's not made of a single process that's just running all in lockstep. You have databases. You have sort of batch calculations. You have things like, email alerts and other connections with the system. A lot of really good systems these days have non-web fronts to them, something like Facebook that has its built-in chat systems as well as its web page-based interactions. So a big machine that has many parts needs gears in order so that those parts can run at different speeds, can be disconnected from each other, cannot snarl up each other's operation, and so that the machine as a whole appears from the outside to be smoothly functioning. But the inside, different parts of it are running at different speeds. Now, this is a sort of ugly diagram. I tried to sketch out a lot of stuff that we've got in Doppler. So we have some data that comes in from elsewhere. It's a travel site, so we have data that comes in from hotel companies and other kind of partners. We have to go and fetch that once a day and integrate it into our database. Users don't really care about that. It's just supposed to happen. We have a bunch of web APIs that we use. We're really, really keen on building as little as possible if someone else has got a better service that does it already. We never wanted to build a photo gallery because Flickr does photos really well. They're always going to be better than us at managing your photos for you. And you're always going to get more out of putting your photos into Flickr than you would putting them into Doppler. Because on Flickr, they'll be plugged into a bunch of other services that you use. So we try and intelligently plug our system into lots of other systems. And again, from a gearing point of view, they are running much, much slower, have a much greater latency than something that's on our local network within our serving infrastructure. We're working on the ability to talk back and forth with our service by IM. We receive incoming emails, we send outgoing emails. So there's all this stuff here. Everything that I've put up on this slide doesn't happen as part of a request for a web page. So So everything here is happening because of a reaction to some real-time event, because of a schedule, or because of a sort of chain of processing something. So let's look at the synchronous way, the very simple, trivial HTTP request, three-tier architecture sort of thing that most people understand as the way you make a website from first principles. We have a user. They submit some data. They've filled in a form. They're doing something that's going to take, that's going to change the state of the world on that service as far as they're concerned. So on Doppler, perhaps they are adding in a trip, putting a comment on someone else's trip, putting in a tip on a hotel that's good to visit. Awful lot of that data that comes in, you need to do stuff with it. So we have this kind of inherently difficult problem that a lot of social networks have, that the actions of one person are going to affect potentially everyone in their social network. And you know, the sort of the recent excitement over Twitter's scaling is a great example of that. Your sort of your Scobles and your Evs and so on, their tweets go out and get copied out to the timelines of tens of thousands of other people. Now, so that comes in. The HTTP request is here. You've got to perform some complex calculation on that, the coincidence, the Twitter message propagation. Got to write it to the database, and then send a web page back to the user. So this is the traditional linear flow of an interaction with a user on a web service. Now, there's a quote I like from Miles Grant at Flickr. The Flickr engineering team is obsessed with making pages load as quickly as possible. And again, Flickr has these enormous amounts of ripple out effects. You publish a photo, you put it in a group, people have to be notified. And there's only so far that you can go with just making the database quicker, optimizing the algorithm that's doing that distribution, putting in more caching, putting in better server infrastructure. So what they're doing is they're refactoring large amounts of their code to split it up into the stuff the user actually needs to see when they've hit the page, they're getting some sort of result coming back, and the work that can be done separately. And they're relying on their queuing system to do the rest. So this concept of a queuing system, of putting work into messages, that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. So, Doppler originally started out, as all little services do, on a single machine, a single VM slice. We started adding more machines, we started adding better hardware, but pretty early on we put in a queuing system. Now, I'm going to go to the literature and appeal to authority. There's a terribly named book, Enterprise Integration Patterns, written by some very distinguished engineer scientist types who work, I think, for IBM, a couple of places like that. Actually, I've given this talk before, and I put the slides up on SlideShare. It was a sort of shorter version of the talk, and I got an email from Gregor, I think it was, saying, "Oh, thanks. Really, really glad that webby, geeky types are appreciating our good, solid enterprise idea. Why do you think it's a bad title?" But it's really, really good. So it's a classic patterns book. Describes here are situations you might be in. Here is the context for those situations and the problems, and here is a solution and a name for that solution to give you a vocabulary to talk about it. And the patterns, the situations they talk about in this book are very sort of enterprise-y. They are about, a trade comes in and multiple systems have to be notified of it, all this sort of thing. But they get right down to sort of definitional stuff. Messaging enables high-speed, asynchronous, program-to-program communication with reliable delivery. So actually, that's one way of saying it's a bit like email. It's a bit like the ability to send messages between processes. It doesn't say where those programs are running. They might be on completely different machines. They might be on completely different networks. There might be two processes on the same machine. But a message queue allows you to put together a little bit of data, send it off to a queue, and know that the things that need to receive that message will receive it. With some level of reliability. And a message is an atomic pattern packet of data that can be transmitted on a channel. So really we're just, again, with sort of, I think email is a really good analogy for understanding it. We're just putting little pieces of information into a channel, and then we're forgetting about them. You hit send, it's gone. Now, here's an example of a message in the Doppler system that we use. And I'll come back to why, to what the pieces of this are and what we use it for. But again, to emphasize that that definition that we saw two slides ago didn't say what was in the message. It didn't say how the message would be sort of routed, how it would be interpreted, if there are any restrictions on how you can use it. And in fact, generally there aren't. A message is just some data. So it can be a piece of binary, it's often a piece of XML. We happen to use JSON because we find that it's kind of, these days, it's, if all you're trying to do is serialize a bit of information, now you've got some data that has structure to it, but it's not, you don't want to spend a lot of time over what would the document schema be to describe this information, how would I communicate this with other companies or whatever. You just want to turn it into a representation that you can send from one bit of code to another. It might be written, the other bit of code might be written in a completely different language. JSON's kind of perfect for this serialization between languages. So yeah, we're sending an ID, a model name, a method, and a little timestamp. Now, why is this interesting? Why would you want to break up a system like this? So this this is a quote from Les Orchard, who worked at Yahoo on Delicious. And the sort of key observation here is, does it really matter when you've put a new link on Delicious? You've tagged it, you submitted it. You don't know at the moment you've submitted it, you don't know whether or not someone else is looking at your feed. There's no way for you to tell from an interaction design point of view what the immediate ripple effects are of you putting some new data into the system. So the key observation there is, does it really matter if I put this in and my friend who's following me on Delicious, if they happen to hit my page at the same moment, or they happen to hit the index page where all the other things that were tagged the same as this were listed, does it really matter if they don't see mine straight away and they might have to reload the page? We're probably not talking to each other or going to notice this. So we can get a much better sort of snappiness of interaction by saying, thank you, got your link. Here's your Delicious homepage. It shows your link that you've just given me. And then we forget about the rest. We forget about the knock-on effects of how it's going to be distributed out. And we just stick a message on a queue saying, oh, Matt B put in this link and here are its tags. And the RSS feeds, the public timelines, the inboxes all get updated in a kind of offline way. So the asynchronous way of making these pages come together looks like this. I'm a user. I come to use the website. I submit some data. We perform only the most basic calculations, so just enough to make a web page that shows you your result, the effect on just your world of what you've done. We return the web page to you. You're done now. Your HTTP connection with my server is closed. You can click on some more things. You can carry on. But at the same time, we put a message on our message queue saying, here's something that just happened, and please perform the complex calculations that the last time I showed you this diagram, I would have had to do before giving you back your web page. And that thing goes off into a queue, and a process somewhere else takes that message, looks at what has to be done, and updates the database for me. So the end result is the database has been updated, the user's got their web page, but they got it a little earlier than they would have done otherwise. So it's very, very nice for kind of that snappiness of interaction. It's very, very nice from a point of view of modularity of your code. And it does put certain restrictions on you from a kind of a product design point of view. Where can I make these breaks in the flow? How can I design a page such that when someone has submitted some data that I have to make some complex reaction to, what can I show them that doesn't need all these sort of heavy calculations that will eventually happen? So your first benefit of this is you've got better latency, faster loading web pages for users. So to come back to this message, this is what we're sending on a queue. So I've just put in a trip on Doppler. I've said I'm going somewhere. We do the very simple basic calculation. Okay, insert the data about that trip into the database. It gets an ID. And we know that for every time a new trip is added, there's a big job that has to be done that might take 10 to 15 seconds of CPU time. Calculate the coincidences on my trip so that when my friends go to Doppler, they can see, oh right, Matt's going to Wellington, you'll be there at the same time, and they get that notification. So this is a little packet, an atomic packet of information to be transmitted on a queue. It's describing something that should happen. So it's basically just, it's sort of a disconnected RPC. It's just trying to call a bit of code when a processor is ready to do so. So, another example. Amy is an excellent London-based website or service. Amy is the Avoiding Mass Extinction Engine. They're creating a platform to gather, an independent platform to gather the carbon impact of the energy use of many activities. They are not trying to sell you a carbon offset or present an agenda on how this should be interpreted. They're trying to act as a platform for gathering this stuff and a place where you can build up your carbon profile, your energy profile of the things that you do. They do this by collecting the data from many, many sources. So they have things like the fuel consumption data from every different make of car that Ford has out there. They hold that in their database, so they'll do these calculations. And they do it by offering an API to web services like Doppler. So because Doppler is about travel, we offer people the option to see what the carbon impact is of their train and plane journeys and so on. Now, the Amy service is really nicely designed. It's a very, they have a web API that they open up to their partners. It essentially works like a shopping cart. You just, for each trip that someone adds into the Doppler database, we can send that trip off to Amy, and they sort of hold that data, and then only you can read it out again. They delegate authority to us to act on your behalf. Now, again, putting something into the Amy system is a one step worse in that kind of in the latency problem than writing into our databases. You know, you've added a trip to Doppler, we've popped it in the database, we've done the complex coincidence calculations, but now we've got to send a packet of information to a third party website. There might be a problem on the internet between our servers and theirs. They might be down for a bit. They might respond quite slowly. We certainly don't want to do this as part of serving up your web page to you. So again, you come to our website. You say, I'd like to switch on my carbon profile, please. I'd like to have my history of trips turned into a nice graph and be able to read this. Okay, we get your request. And we send you back a web page going, cool, we've switched on carbon profiling for your account. Check back soon, and it will be here. And we send off a message onto our message queue, please update Amy. And then when a worker process is available, it goes off, makes the third-party connection to the Amy API, sends the data to it. And then when that data comes back, it updates the database. So you've got this whole flow here. Data's come in, or a request has come in from you. Our web server has seen it. Pretty very, very quickly says, cool, here you go, here's your data. Here's your web page, here's your thank you and a link to where you can see it soon. And then off in the background, these things start to happen. So again, now this is sort of saving us, protecting us from two potential problems. The potential slow page load of doing heavy lifting, complex calculations, third-party APIs in our web page rendering. But also, it's protecting us from network problems or slowness that we can't actually control, the slowness of a third-party API. Now, N more than one. There's a really lovely article by Joe Gregorio on his blog where he talks about so many of the problems in scaling services on a technical level is because of assumptions we make when we first build a service, that there'll be one of anything. And he says you should, when you're building anything you're building these days, particularly now we have the option to start up a whole load of Amazon EC2 servers with a single command, or to get sort of very cheap hosting, we should assume there's more than one of every bit of our system, more than one database, more than one web server, all this kind of thing. And when we have this cloud of services, this works brilliantly with a messaging system, because if we take a bunch of work that has to be done, we can break it out over multiple servers because of this disconnection, this asynchrony between our web service and the work that has to be done. So every day at midnight, Doppler does a big load of calculations, or rather every hour, at each midnight around the world. Doppler does a whole bunch of calculations. People are going on trips. Where is Matt going to be today? Has he started a new trip? Do we need to notify people about it? So you run through these things. There's nothing you can do but just run through each user one by one, doing a bunch of calculations for them. So it's midnight. It's time to update user number one. Do a bunch of heavy lifting to work out the changes in the database that the new day brings. Update the database, and we're done. And then we do the same thing for user two, user three. Now, if this series of processes is separated out so that the arrow at the top, the update user one, is a message. So we just stick a message on a queue going, user one needs to be updated, user two needs to be updated. Then a worker process somewhere in our web server cluster will pick them off one by one and do them. And the day that we can afford three servers, it works the same way with no changes in the code. We need to update these three users. It's sent off on the queue. The instruction is out there on the queue to be done. If there are three servers, then the queuing system will sort of hand out the message in a round-robin way, so that the more servers you add, automatically, the more parallel processing you get. So this lets you scale, not just in the same way that you would scale a front end of a web service by adding more web servers so you can make more pages faster. This lets you do more batch calculations faster. And new processors, new workers, can join this cloud of computing capability with no changes to your code. The work just gets handed out in this queuing way. And then, in exactly the same way, we end up with an updated database. Now, once your service starts to get larger, once you're in a you've got many, many servers, there are some of them that are designed fit for just one purpose. So this couple of machines over here are for sending out email. This machine is dedicated just to serve API requests to make sure your API is, people making heavy use of your API don't bring down the rest of your website. These are the web servers. You end up with quite a sort of monitoring and sysadmin headache with these things. So another very nice way to use messages, to use this abstraction of there is a sender, something goes out there, and something will process that message at some point, but you don't care. It's a fire and forget process. Is that every little piece of code in your system that's doing, say, serving a web page, doing a bit of work, it's very, very easy to put in a little bit of monitoring, a little bit of performance check. So I'm about to serve this web page, start a timer, serve the web page, finish the timer. Okay, we've got a timing there. So for serving this particular web page, for this user, it took this long. That little fragment of information, that performance information, again, bundle that up into a message, a little piece of JSON, like I showed earlier, send it out on a queue, and that means you can gather, if every machine in your cluster is just constantly gathering this information, and rather than writing it to a disk where you've got to go and collect it from many machines, you can, in real time, throw it onto a queue, then something somewhere in your system can be monitoring that. And then in real time, you can build graphs and other kind of monitoring systems. So this is, I took a snapshot from two of our servers in our cluster. This is a sort of Ruby one-liner, connects to the message queue system, and says, I would like any message that's on the monitoring queue, please. And on the monitoring queue, you get the machine that served a web page, how many milliseconds it took, what the URL was, who the user was. And this, I was able to just dip into this queue, dip into this stream of performance information without changing anything on my web service. In fact, I could connect to this over an SSH tunnel from my laptop from this room and say, okay, how are things doing? Or filter it so that I only see, for example, our blog badge, which has a particular piece of code that's separate from the rest. How long are the blog badges taking to render right now? Dip into that stuff. And again, the code doesn't know what I'm doing. The system just carries on. It's throwing out these messages, which are in code, just a one-liner. You literally, in the Ruby library that we use, you just say, publish, queue name, comma, piece of data, and it just happens. It takes microseconds, and your bit of code just carries on. But I'm able to dip into this stuff and get some really good monitoring out of it. So, what kind of software is out there? As you saw, we've got this book, Enterprise Integration Patterns, and that really is a clue as to where this technology came from. The thing that makes me feel really comfortable about using this stuff is that it's been used in huge, expensive, mission-critical enterprise systems inside banks for years and years. because they are the kind of environments where you do need to audit what's been going on, separate processing into multiple machines, have ripple out effects from a single thing happening to many processes noticing and doing something about it. And I was on a panel at a conference about 6 months ago where we were talking about internet scale messaging, so just, but still, asynchronous messages, pushing messages between many, many servers or many, many services. And there was a guy in the audience who was from BEA. He'd worked on their WebLogic messaging products for years. It was really reassuring to hear from him that me and the other couple of internet kids were basically slightly shakily reinventing all the stuff they've been documenting inside the banks for years, rediscovering the patterns that they're using, giving them silly names, and writing bad software that didn't do it as well as their stuff, which is great, because that means we've got good ideas with loads of potential to make them better. And people are doing real work with these kind of patterns. So we have, yeah, the big daddy systems, the kind of IBM MQ series and that kind of stuff. They're big, they're expensive. You can make them scale. You just put down the money. Happily, open source has been getting into this bit by bit over the last sort of 5 years or so. There's the Apache has the ActiveMQ project, and that's literally, if you go to the ActiveMQ Apache site, you can grab a tarball, download it, untar it, type java-jar something or other, and you have a message broker. It's sitting there, and you can connect to it. There's a bunch of really nice, again, open protocols. There's a protocol called STOMP, Standard Text-Oriented Message Protocol, which is very much like a traditional internet protocol, an SMTP or HTTP. It's just text over a socket. And there are libraries for it, for PHP, for Ruby, whatever. So you put this, you know, chunky-ish Java process on one of your on your server, and then during your web page request, you can just talk to it, and it just sort of works. It's a little black magic black box. There are systems like Beanstalk, which is specifically for people working with Ruby on Rails. It sort of integrates quite tightly with do this, and we'll let you do a job in the background for me from the middle of a Rails app. Twitter actually built their own messaging system from scratch, first a version called Starling, and their new one is called Kestrel. And now pretty much all of Twitter runs internally on message queues. So whenever you do anything on Twitter, you get the immediate effect comes back in your web page, but something called Kestrel is off in the background handing out the work to hundreds of servers in their cluster. So there's a lot of stuff around there. Spread comes out of Stanford, I think, again from 5 or 10 years ago. We've used that at, I've used Spread when I used to work at the BBC, some BBC radio systems using that. And on Doppler, we use ActiveMQ. But to sum up around this stuff, this has been a bunch of quite technical information. This has been about, well, how do I turn bits of my system, so that bits of my server side, into asynchronous systems. You know, we've been getting more and more used to asynchronous on the client side. We know that the web browser may be doing a bunch of stuff and the server doesn't know about it, or the web browser may issue extra requests, extra XML HTTP requests to a server as part of, you know, while you're looking at a web page. But we haven't talked as an industry, as a practice, too much about asynchronous on the server side. One of the trickiest things to get your head around with this is how does this affect product design? This is not just a magic technical solution that your developers can drop into the system. It's like, all right, it's okay. We've got a message bus now, so some of the stuff happens quicker or happens offline. It's really important to think about how this affects a service. Kellen Elliott McCrae, who works at Flickr, has written some very nice reactions to this stuff. The really important thing about any one individual's experience of the web is that from your subjectivity, from your point of view, the web is linear. You are going through an experience. You are clicking through things one by one. And we do have a sort of intuitive understanding that there is a cause and effect in the system. And if you do something like, for example, on Flickr, if you add, you're looking at one of your pictures and you tag, you add a tag to it. I don't know if you've ever noticed, if you add a tag and then immediately go and do a search, add a unique tag, one you know won't be anywhere else on Flickr. If you immediately then go and do a search, your photo won't show up under a search for that tag. And the reason is that they add the tags into the database and display your page back. And then they put a message out on their message queue going, there's a new, very new tags on this photo, and the search servers, the big chunky Yahoo search engines, will work through that queue one by one, and then when they get to that message, your picture will then be indexed against that tag. But you end up with a system then that isn't quite in lockstep with cause and effect. The things that the users see as a result of what they've done appear to be consistent, but then they take some other action, like searching for the thing they just put in, and it breaks that view of consistency. And that's a really big deal for interaction design. Can you design things such that for any one user, each step of the way that they go through your experience is internally consistent, and yet still design these things such that they can scale? There are ways to scale systems that don't involve this kind of asynchronous processing, but they do seem to be the most expensive route once you get past a certain size. It just ends up being, I've got to make my database writes faster. And every now and then, Moore's Law or a new magic box, you know, a new Intel SSD disk or something will come along and save you for another 6 months. But in the end, you've got to separate out the stuff the user needs to see right now from the stuff you can do later. And if you try and put that in later without having thought about the interaction design of this asynchrony, then your service is going to get confusing. So, come and talk to me more about this over lunch. We've had this in Doppler for over a year now, and just little bit by bit, we've been putting it in there. But it's always a learning experience. There are loads and loads of websites out there that behind the scenes are using this. We're all discovering what these patterns are when it's the web rather than finance. So I'd really love to hear about your experiences when you get into it. And thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your lunch.